Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, let's not exaggerate our words here early in the morning, texters. 9631 on the text page. I'm stunned that our tight end room is so bad that a Cade Stover injury is being treated like we've lost Tony Gonzalez. The guy should have been cut after last season. All right, two things. One.
But the guy should have been cut after last season.
Yeah, that's a bad take. That's one of the things.
Yeah, that's horrible take. That's an incredibly bad take.
Should have been cut.
Yeah.
He's a fourth-round pick who did some decent things as a rookie. Yeah. What are you talking about?
Why are you still drunk?
Did we treat it like it was like they lost Tony Gonzalez? It was literally like the third thing. We went to it after we talked about Monday Night Football last night.
Yeah.
At what point were we treating Cade Stover like he was Tony Gonzalez? It's news. It's the one news item for a team that was off yesterday, the Houston Texans.
Yeah.
Team that you can hear right here on Sports Radio 610, by God.
Listen, pal. If you were upset about the Texans perhaps only scoring three field goals in that game, do you think that the loss of some of the starters or guys who play a lot is going to make it a better team?
Right.
Is that what you're – you think somehow – no, actually, wow, this is a good thing. Hopefully all 11 starters get injured because surely there'll be a better football team after that.
Cade Stover, second highest PFF score on the offense on Sunday.
Yeah. Right, which isn't, again, we're not treating that like that's a Tony Gonzalez type of performance or what have you.
But he played all right.
It's not good.
Yep.
Yeah.
Highest PFF?
It's like, hey, okay, so what? Your boss, demoted you and gave you a pay cut. What are you so upset about? It's not like you're living on the streets.
Right.
Yeah, there's degrees to all of this, all
Thank
right?
You. Yes. Yeah.
Man. How did that guy figure out a way to dress up, like trying to charade as a positive thinking guy while being the most negative guy on earth?
I don't know.
You gotta listen, buddy, you gotta take the day off, you gotta go home, and you gotta sit and think about where you are in life, all right?
You might like
that's
that.
Where I'm concerned about you and your attitude and the way you react to things.
Yep. All right. It is so decreed by Pope Zaza. Take the day off, 9631. By the way, best PFF score on offense? C.J. Stroud for the Houston Texans.
Yeah. Well, C.J. did really well when under pressure, and that's how it looked like at times.
9 of 10 for over 100 yards. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And now there were also times, though, where I think C.J. still looks a little skittish in the pocket. I think last year did a little bit of damage, and I can't blame him for still being skittish behind that offensive line. The offensive line wasn't it wasn't the complete and total disaster that you felt like after the game. But there's times where he's got to figure out, all right, can I sit here and be comfortable in this pocket,
yeah,
even though it's clean for now, versus what happened last year when he would try to do that. It's a tough spot to be in as a quarterback.
All right, so some leftovers from the game on Sunday. I had a chance to rewatch it yesterday, and I know you've rewatched it too, Seth. The very first play of the game, this is kind of a throwaway and watching it the first time because, we were all still getting our food out of the fridge and popping our drinks and things like that up here in the live lounge getting ready. So I didn't really watch the opening kickoff. Damian Pierce just letting the ball roll through the landing area right in front of him and then going and kneeling on it in the end zone, essentially costing the team at least however many yards he would have got if he just scooped it up and tried to return it. For those who don't know, if the ball lands in the landing area, if the ball lands between the 20 and the goal line and it hits the ground, and then rolls into the end zone, it comes back out to the 20. If it goes into the end zone in the air, it goes out to the 35. That's an important distinction. So the ball came back out to the 20-yard line, where if Damian had just been aware and scooped the thing up, the Texans would have been starting, I would guess, probably at least maybe 8 to 10 yards ahead of that. And it's a little thing. And at the time, it doesn't feel like a lot. But once you know how that game ended with all the mistakes and the penalties, special teams wasn't great in this game, I didn't think. On the rewatch, it's one of those things that's a little infuriating.
It's the only thing that I wonder about, and I hesitate because this new rule is new to all of us, is I don't know exactly what the specific rules are on that. You know, like when somebody catches a punt with their feet on like the 1 yard line or whatever and tries to return it, you understand there's time tested rules for that. I don't know exactly how they handle this specific situation. Okay. So it didn't look good. I'm guessing that you're 100% correct to be upset about that. And I think you're probably correct too, because there's at least one other instance in the game where it was bad. It looked like last year exactly, because Damian is in pass protection in the backfield. Oh, boy. And it looks like he's checking the Mike linebacker to see if he blitzes, and the Mike backer doesn't blitz. So Damian just releases out of the backfield, ignoring completely that one of the other linebackers is indeed blitzing. Meanwhile, the offensive tackle is just getting completely destroyed and unaware, or it really couldn't pick it up. And Damian just leaves. And Stroud himself was also unaware of exactly what was going on. So it was Stroud directing traffic and then having to rely on guys like Damian to also, you know, think on the fly at times and everything. There's going to be some hiccups, and we warned you of this. I think the Rams did a really good job, perhaps, of knowing that CJ was doing a lot more of directing traffic and setting the calls, and were able to. I think there were a few times, at least, where they were able to dupe CJ into thinking the pressure was coming from one side, and it came from the exact opposite side.
It looked like it. You're exactly right. It looked like it. The first 2 minutes of this game had the Damian Pierce kickoff follies, a holding penalty, which I know was questionable, but it was a penalty, got called a penalty, a basic stunt getting pressure, and then a delay of game penalty. This is in the first 2 minutes of the game. These things all happened with the Texans. So what were you doing all summer?
I know, we're right. Yeah, you're on your scripted plays. Here you go. And you get a delay of game while you're on the plays that you've practiced.
Yes.
That you've gone through walkthroughs at the hotel with, all of that.
Okay, yeah. I'm very curious your thoughts on this. I think Ariante Ursery is going to want to burn the tape of this game by and large. I thought the little bit of time he spent on the left side when they had to bring Blake Fisher in, when Cam Robinson went out, I watched him on those reps. Those reps were better. It was only four reps, but they were better than, and it was hard to be worse than he was at times on the right side of the offensive line. But what did you think of Ariante Ursery, having rewatched
it? A lot of what I expected versus this defensive front. I think he did some good things in the game. I think he shows a general awareness, but he's a rookie who's flip-flopping in his first NFL game versus one of the best defensive fronts in the league. And there were times where, you know, some of the things I was concerned about, just where he doesn't quite still know how to use all that size and strength he has. He kind of gets caught bending at the waist at times instead of being in a good football position. He lets guys get into his body. Like, he's going to have to work through that, and that's what you expect out of a guy in his first game.
Yeah.
So if he had come out there and just shut everybody down, you wouldn't be able to shut me up this morning. We'd be talking about Ariante Ursery every single segment all week.
Yeah.
But that's where you are with him right now.
There were a couple.
I'm perturbed that Cam Robinson, the veteran, isn't the guy who can be trusted to go left and right. If you're going to pay a guy a good chunk of money to be a bridge tackle or whatever to make it easier to get your younger guy involved, maybe we go with a guy that you could feel comfortable putting on the right side of the
that
line.
That is a take. I've not heard anybody say that. I like that. You're the vet. You're in your ninth season in the league, and you're getting paid $12 million a year. Get over on the right side, buddy. We're paying you a lot of good. We're paying you good, hard, cold cash to be a tackle for this team. Take one for the squad.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
There were just a couple plays where I'm like, ah, crap. Ursary's going to be on the next cut-up of Jared Verse that comes out in, like, week 8.
You're going to have to watch these all up. Yeah, you're going to have to watch the NFL Top 100 next year and
right
see.
Right into this lap. Yeah, well, maybe Ursary will get to do some of those vignettes. They'll interview him. What was it like getting dominated by Jared Verse in your first game ever in the NFL? Nico Collins had 5 targets in this game. I'm not telling anybody anything new that you guys didn't already know. This was a big thing. I went back and looked up the numbers, Seth. Mm-hmm. In 2024, last season, with Bobby Slowick, Nico Collins had fewer than 6 targets. Keep in mind, he only had 5 on Sunday for a full game. He only had fewer than 6 targets last year twice. Both times they were games he left in the first quarter. The Buffalo game where he left with the hamstring injury, the Tennessee game in week 18 where they took all the starters out once they hit all their statistical milestones. Yeah. And Nico actually had 5 targets in the first quarter of that game. Say what you will about Bobby Slowick. There was never an issue with Bobby Slowick getting the ball, at least targeting his best playmaker last year.
And again, CJ said this after the game. The Rams did a good job of showing a lot of cover 2 zone stuff, deep zone stuff, that disguised also to make it really tough to get Nico downfield. And I sent one of those clips to Cecil Shorts. Just that it was a classic. Like, I'm like, all right, I'm pretty sure this is cover 2, but I'm not sure because this doesn't look like your normal. The Rams aren't operating by the normal rules that you operate. And yeah. Cecil said he watched it about 9 times and was like, yeah, because I'm asking. There was this one specific play where CJ had thrown over the middle on a 3rd and long. That, and I was curious about, all right, should CJ have waited and seen what happened downfield with Nico? And really, probably not. You know, like if the Rams were dead set on taking Nico Collins out of the game, you got to find your production elsewhere. And that's where they fall short. I mean, it's the same thing. This is what felt like last year was, okay, they want to take Nico Collins out of the game. Great. You know what that does? That creates opportunities elsewhere. And it just, that's not how it worked out. They were stuck in the same position of like, well, they took away our Nico. What do we do? Yeah. I don't know.
Kick field goals. Okay, we'll just kick field goals. Yeah, 3 of them.
And they did a lot of what Bobby Slowick would do too, is running a whole lot of condensed formations where you got tight ends and fullbacks and everybody else down in the box.
Yeah.
And if you're going to run the ball, great, but you're probably not going to be churning yardage in that, unless you're really, really good and physically dominating on the line of scrimmage. And the Texans' offensive line, they're not going to dominate that defensive front.
God, not that
one. They were better than last year. And I know this sounds like I'm trying to get an attaboy for a C-plus or something, but it is big. The fact that there were 0 tackles for a loss in the game, when they were running as much as they were with the running backs that they were running with, that is it's a substantial step forward. It's not what's going to win you the Super Bowl,
but
they weren't shooting themselves in the foot with getting tackled for a loss, for a 5-yard loss on first down. They were shooting themselves in the foot with penalties and sacks at times. But the reason that the average 3rd down was 3rd and 11 was more because of penalties and the 3 sacks than it was anything else. So that is progress.
Yeah.
It's not as bad in that regard, at least.
Okay, well, the penalties were bad, and this is the thing, and going back and watching, I will credit them this. They are they were quite diverse and versatile when it came to their types of penalties. 8 different types of penalties committed by 11 different guys, Seth. 11 penalties committed by 11 different. So we didn't have a Laramie situation where we had one guy. We had
11 complimentary
guys.
Transgressing.
It's right exactly there. Right. We had 11 guys making little mistakes instead of one $26 million guy making 5 mistakes with penalties. And the second half was, and I'm being jokey about this. The second half was, but the 3rd quarter was absurdly bad. Illegal use of hands by Stingley. Illegal shift by Jaden Higgins. False start by Laken Tomlinson. That brutal, the 2 most brutal penalties of the game for me for the Texans were the ones that were towards the end of the 3rd quarter. Blake Fisher comes in for 4 snaps, and one of them, he's grabbing the face mask. I think it was a Verse or Young, one of the 2.
It was Young.
Yeah. Like he's getting pushed off a ledge.
Yeah, I don't remember. Yeah.
Either
yeah,
one, whoever it was.
It was egregious. It was egregious.
Grabs and he's falling backwards, holding onto it like he's falling off a building. And then, dude, Daryl Taylor, the offsides at the end of the 3rd quarter. Like the only reason Matthew Stafford is at the line of scrimmage because the play clock, the play clock has more time on it than the game clock at that point. The only reason he's at the line of scrimmage in a game that they're leading is to try to draw you off sides. And with 3 seconds left in the quarter, he gives you a hut hut, and Daryl Taylor jumps into the backfield. What are you doing?
It's an unforgivable mistake, and yet it's one that I have to confess to making. I did it versus the Colts, and I knew that they were in a situation. It was Peyton Manning with the Texans in a year that was not going well for us at all. I think it might have been our 2-14 season. Mm-hmm. But this is what happened. I knew they were trying to draw us off sides, but you know what Peyton did? He had the tight end like go into motion, but he like jumped back to go into motion. And I thought, screw this. And I jumped off sides and hit the tight end. And I got flagged. They would later outlaw that. They would later outlaw it. But I basically had to be the test case to show the world that, no, this is unjust.
Oh, wow.
Should I have chosen that moment to do it? Perhaps not. But I felt that this is wrong and I will not abide it.
So there is a Seth Payne rule out there now.
It's not. I mean, it was like 10 years later, and it had nothing to do with me.
I'm going to call it the Seth Payne rule. That's good for the show.
It was so bogus. It was, he would go on a hard count, and the tight end would jump back really brutally. And I remember making the conscious decision of like, well, screw this.
Yeah.
And I tried to draw the penalty, and no, they flagged
the whole thing. Did you stand over him, tell him to go die? You remember who the tight end was? Was it Dallas Clark?
In my mind it was, but that might be me just trying to make it seem like a cooler situation.
Yeah, it's cooler if it's Dallas Clark.
I'm pretty sure it was Dallas Clark. Totally, it was definitely a white guy. And it was bogus, man.
Yeah,
it was bogus.
I'm glad.
But
you
this was Darrell Taylor's got to be smarter than that. These pre-snap penalties, the illegal shifts, especially. That, again, felt like Bobby Slowick.
Yes.
Felt like, all right, come on, you guys. Remember, this is, you know why it's personally devastating to me? It's because I said the one thing that I think that we're going to see out of this offense is that it's going to be a cleaner operation. I feel like from watching training camp, it looks like it's going to be a cleaner operation, and yet it was not a cleaner operation.
It's what we were sold. D'Amico said that when he was asked in the week leading up to the first game. What do you notice differently about the offense this year than last year? Boy, they're on the details. They are sure on the details, you know, and perfecting their job. And 11 pen, it wasn't all the offense with the penalties, but the penalties on the offense, I don't think they got a single holding penalty. The penalties on the offense were all procedural.
No, they got a holding
things.
Penalty.
They did? Yeah. I'm not looking. Yeah. I transcribed all the penalties from the game, from the box score into this, and there's not a single hold. I mean,
it says right there in the show prep first quarter, a hold on Cam Robinson.
Oh, Cam Robinson, you're right. Yeah, you're right. It was a bad call.
You wrote
though.
It down.
It was a bad call. Yeah. I was looking for holding. I just wrote hold. all right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Tuesday. Let's get to headlines. This is a huge series for the Astros. If you're trying to get a bye in the first round of the playoffs, big series for the Astros. We'll get to in headlines. We got Texans news, the football talk in this segment. It's presented by Paramount Plus. Can't count on much, but you can always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus. Stream your local NFL game like live every Sunday, all season long, starting at just $30 for your first year. That's like $250 a month. Visit ParamountPlus.com/NFL to get started today.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns.
And you're seeing exactly outside of Cleveland, think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.